When it comes to diversity, perhaps no plant has as much potential as hemp, which is kind of weird to say that hemp has so much potential because it's been around for thousands of years.
There is a deep and rich history of hemp across many cultures. I think the oldest archaeological evidence that's confirmed of hemp was 8,000 BC, so 10,000 years old. It feels like a new crop to us in a lot of ways, but people would laugh from prior times because it's been with humans for a really long time.
That's Dr. Zachary Stansel, a germplasm curator at the Plant Genetic Resources Unit in Geneva, New York. He leads ARS's research on hemp germplasm preservation and cultivar development. Hemp's connection to this country is, well, tricky. It was considered an important crop in colonial times for its diverse uses, not only clothing, but for paper, seed oil, and medicines. In the 1930s, the Ford Motor Company operated a biomass conversion plant that processed ethanol from hemp and developed car parts constructed from hemp. In fact, if you look on the back of a $10 bill from the early 1900s, you'll see an image of farmers harvesting hemp. Hemp production in the U.S. was banned in 1937, mainly due to its genealogy as a cannabis plant, which we'll dive more into later. It wasn't until 2018, nearly 90 years later, that Congress reauthorized the production of hemp, giving farmers across the nation a new crop to grow.
One of the coolest things about hemp is it's used for so many different things, but that also can make it overwhelming and a complex problem. I think that for hemp to be successful, we'll use all of the parts of the plant. So we've been mostly talking about the fiber, the outer layer of the plant. Inside of the plant is the hird. It tends to be more woody. Can a farmer grow a field of hemp, harvest the fiber out, but also sell the hird as an off product?
Hemp has long been used for fiber and grains, but researchers are exploring applications for biofuel, sustainable building materials, carbon sequestration, and even nanotechnology. A lot of applications indeed, but for this episode, we're talking about wearable science. And hemp could have a huge impact on clothing and other textiles. I spoke with Dr. Heather Grab about the advantages hemp has over other clothing materials. Grab is a senior lecturer at Cornell University's School of Integrative Plant Sciences.
There's a really long history of using hemp, particularly because it has very long fibers with high tensile strength. So that means it's a much more durable natural fiber compared to other alternatives that are out there. Some of the benefits relative to cotton, for example, is that hemp can be grown in a much wider geographic area than cotton can. It often uses lower levels of water inputs. And at the moment, there are very few big pests that dramatically threaten those crops. We're not applying pesticides to this crop at a very broad scale, in contrast to some of the other natural fibers that are out there.
Yield is also a big benefit. Hemp plants can not only grow fast, but tall, like up to 20 feet tall. And as Stansel mentioned, they're finding the entire plant has market potential, even its inner woody core called the hird, which is already being used in animal bedding.
Will hemp prove to be this new widespread crop that kind of takes its place in the pantheon of corn and soybean and canola? Or will it be this kind of minor niche specialty crop? I don't think we really know until we give the plant a fair shake.
Equal to its potential are the challenges of growing hemp under the current regulations for THC levels. Because hemp is a cannabis plant, it may carry high levels of THC, or tetrahydrocannabinol, a chemical within the plant that could have psychoactive effects on humans. Hemp also contains high levels of cannabidiol, or CBD, a chemical that typically does not have psychoactive effects. Current regulations stipulate that hemp plants must produce THC levels below 0.3% to be legally grown. But how can you find that out before you start growing the plant? That's what growers want to know.
THC and CBD are actually extremely similar molecules. They just kind of differ by a few small bonds. And yes, they have pretty profound psychological differences on people. Some of the work done at Cornell University and other places has done a really nice job of taking apart that biosynthetic mechanism that says this particular plant is really going to shift a lot of its energy into producing a lot of THC or shift a lot of energy into producing CBD. In conjunction with that, we have these really fantastic tools called molecular markers, where we can take a plant that has recently germinated, just a few leaves, get the DNA out, and then use these molecular marker tools to say, this plant is going to have extremely high THC or very low THC.
Stansell and his team are using these molecular markers to help plant breeders select and develop hemp varieties that will be low in THC. They have gathered hemp seeds from all over the world to create this huge germplasm repository. With such a mass selection of diverse seeds, breeders can select the most advantageous traits to create new varieties of hemp that increase its appeal for growers and in the marketplace.
Think about tomatoes. Tomatoes were domesticated from wild plants in the Andes, and they're very small, maybe the size of a marble. Some of them were poisonous, and they didn't really taste good. Over time, formal academic people and small gardeners have made selections on that germplasm to produce these larger, more delicious, more agronomically successful varieties of tomatoes. So one thing that's really exciting with hemp is we're at kind of in the early stage of formally breeding these well-adapted, locally adapted types of hemp that will meet all these needs and produce extremely high quality products. Having a library of diverse hemp germplasm is this critical first step that allows the breeders, the researchers, and ultimately the farmers to be successful at producing hemp.
Researchers are also finding that hemp provides environmental benefits as a pollinator resource, especially during times of the year when pollinator flowers are often dormant.
If you go into a hemp field in the middle of the summer, it'll be buzzing with insects, and many of those are bees. And that's a period of time, especially in agricultural landscapes, where there's very few other floral resources that are available to those pollinators. And so that could provide a key support for insect populations that go on to provide important ecosystem services in other high-value specialty crops surrounding farms that are growing hemp.
As Stansell mentioned earlier, hemp success really depends on two main factors. It has to be able to be grown efficiently, and there has to be a diverse marketplace interested in the crop. Stansell likens it to cotton, which has greatly expanded its usage beyond clothing.
In the case of cotton, that was a really big breakthrough where, yes, you're getting the cotton fibers, but it turns out that the seeds are rich in cottonseed oil. And that became sort of the difference between growing a profitable crop of cotton versus a non-profitable, is having that little bit of cottonseed oil. It kind of made the difference for cotton farmers to be successful. So kind of finding applications for this herd tissue or this herd material as an input into industrial processes, I think, is going to be critical.
Stansell and Grab are cautiously optimistic on their future outlook for hemp. While its potential is fruitful, these challenges have to be addressed before this new or old plant can truly be called a wonder plant.
A lot of our expansion of acreage in the U.S. over the past several years that we've had a federally legal hemp program has been with high cannabinoid hemp production. But I do think we've kind of gotten over the wave of cannabinoids. And now I'm hoping that we'll see, as we build our processing capacity, especially on the fiber side, that we'll continue to see growth and expansion in the industrial side of the market.
Yes, consumers are certainly shifting to prefer natural fibers over synthetic ones, but it's in that space. There's cotton, there's wool, there's flax. What place will hemp fit in there? This is a complex problem that's going to take a lot of time, a lot of research. And then supply chains are often chicken and egg problems, where farmers won't grow hemp until they're confident that they can sell it to a processor. And then processors may not want to invest millions of dollars of infrastructure until they're confident they can buy it, right? So I think those kind of problems can be addressed by the USDA and other organizations to help kind of build up the inertia on a crop like hemp. We have this opportunity to do some extremely exciting research on a crop that has a phenomenal amount of potential.
Thank you for listening to this comfy, cozy, wearable episode of Science in Your Shopping Cart. And stay tuned for our next episode, which weaves agricultural science with sports and athletics. It's a game winner for sure. For Science in Your Shopping Cart, I'm Todd Silver.
Science in Your Shopping Cart is produced by the Office of Communications, Agricultural Research Service, an agency of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For more information, visit www.ars.usda.gov. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Like us on Facebook, and watch us on YouTube.